Many kids are already back at school, and the rest are set to follow on Monday. And when most kids are thinking about new shoes or looking forward to catching up with old friends, on the minds of some might be something less positive: bullying. I am joined in studio by Dr. Neil Gottheil. He's a clinical psychologist at the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario, and he's going to walk us through this difficult topic. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
All right, let's start at the beginning. What are some signs that your child might be bullied?
You know, I often get asked that question, and I think the first thing there is to say we have to have conversations with our kids, because kids that are bullied, they don't want people typically to know that it's happened. The bully doesn't want to know because they don't want to get in trouble. And the person that's being targeted often, you know, feels quite a fair bit of shame for being picked on and not knowing how to defend themselves. So looking for signs is important, but starting with having a conversation and making sure you have a connection with your child so you can do that is critical. In terms of signs, I mean, you're looking for any changes. If you see changes in mood, changes in their behavior, they're not sleeping properly, they're trying to avoid going to school, those sorts of things you're looking for. And certainly if you're seeing increases in anxiety across the board in other areas, then notice those changes and ask those questions. That's when you have to ask what's going on.
So let's say that we do find out from our child, yes, I am being bullied. How should we react?
Okay, well, that's also very critical. So a lot of parents feel a tremendous amount of pressure, like I have to do something, I have to protect my kid. Also, we see that parents, certainly if it's happening at school, can feel a fair bit of emotion that the school is not protecting my child, and can come in and approach the school in an angry way. And all of that's not going to be helpful for anyone. In fact, a big reaction with a lot of emotion is why a lot of kids don't come to their parents.
Right.
It comes with a lot of fear. So, for example, kids are often very afraid that the parents are going to run to the school and make a big fuss, and they're going to be further embarrassed in front of their peers, they're going to be called a tattletale, and the bullies are going to make it worse on them. And also, when parents come running into a school very upset, what they're missing is that there's a whole group of people within the kid culture that are working together to keep the secret, right? Mm-hmm. So that, again, the bullies and the victims don't want it to know, be known. And a lot of bystanders are afraid to come forward too, because if I say something, I might be next. So if everybody's not talking and bullies are specifically planning to only bully in front of the other kids, a lot of times the school may not be aware unless someone comes forward. So before jumping and reacting, it's really important to sit down and have a conversation with your kid.
That makes absolute sense. Now, we hear a lot about cyberbullying, social media bullying. How prevalent is bullying, and is it more so than in the past, perhaps, or how is it different?
Well, you know, for as long as I can remember, the numbers in terms of the studies that have been done on prevalence rates have tended to be around 10 to 15% of kids in a classroom are targets of bullies, and about same thing, but 10 to 15% of the kids are bullies. Okay. And interestingly, when you look through the literature, that part doesn't seem to have changed a lot over time. But what I would argue is that I think it's a pretty hard number to often get, because again, a lot of people don't want to admit that this is happening. The other thing is it's certainly changed over time, because we have provided through technology a great way to allow bullies to do so anonymously, to do so 24/7. In my day, when I was growing up, if you were picked on, at least when you went home, you got away from it all. You found your safe place in your room. The reality is that bullying is going on behind the scenes, with people setting up harassing social media campaigns, or sending very hurtful emails and texts or images. So it is something that, with the advent of cyberbullying, has certainly increased in frequency.
Before the interview, you and I had talked a little bit about this move to sort of stamp out bullying and why you think that's impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is something that hits into the emotions and maybe gives the hope that this is a problem like an illness we can find a cure for with a vaccine or something. And the reality is, from the beginning of the time that humankind has been walking on this earth, there have been the need for people or the drive for people to establish hierarchies, to exert who is more powerful powerful or dominant, and it creates some set of a structure. I mean, we want our leaders. We want to know that other people are in charge of certain things, and we want to have our role in life. So hierarchies have a purpose. But when you have people that are willing to establish their spot at the top and use whatever means that they can to get there, including aggression and violence at the expense of others, and it's certainly a problem. Now, focusing on how do we prevent and as much as we can, how do we reduce the amount of bullying that's going on? How do we create proper consequences for bullies so that it's not as advantageous for them? And how do we take kids that want control and power so much and maybe redirect them towards leadership types of positions where they're advocating for others and showing their strength versus putting people down and showing that they can dominate others in that way?
But you also mentioned something just before we started this interview that was of great interest to me. You said that cyberbullying has changed because it doesn't end. Can you explain that phenomenon behind old school bullying and contemporary bullying?
Right. So there are many different forms that bullying takes. So we have kind of the real world bullying, and that has things like, you know, direct physical aggression towards other people. There's also the verbal forms, aggression, that operate under similar principle. Then you have social or relational types of bullying where groups of people, usually with a head, trying to socially ostracize and ridicule and spread rumors about other people. So that's the real world stuff. And then you have cyberspace, which just opened the door for many other ways to be cruel and mean to others. Now, don't get me wrong. There's lots of incredible benefits. I was checking my phone before I got here. But the reality is it's open doors because it creates an anonymity. And that allows kids to bully and potentially avoid any consequences. When you're talking about real-world bullying, if I want to feel dominant and in control, then what I need from the person that I target and victimize is I need them to display for everybody else around that I am powerful. And the way that they do that is by demonstrating some pain cues. So if I bully someone, I would need my victim, my target, to cry, to demonstrate in some way that I have dominated them. When that happens, I've done the work of a bully and I can step back and wait for another day. However, in cyberspace, it's very different. So if I send out mean texts or I create a website that's going to harass you, I actually don't have you in front of me. So you're not demonstrating the pain cues. I'm using my imagination to think about how powerful I am that I can do this to you, but I'm not actually getting the pain cues. So there's actually no brake pedal being pressed to tell me, stop bullying, he's had enough or she's had enough. As a result, we're seeing the kinds of places where cyber attacks can go. It's just vicious. And I would argue probably beyond what we would typically see in direct bullying.
That's a very interesting observation. Thank you for sharing that. I know this is a very broad question to end on, but do you have any advice, anything you can throw out for our listeners that just might help?
Well, absolutely. And some of the advice can come across as simplistic, and yet it's very complicated, as any parent will say. I usually talk about four different areas: connection, conversation, planning, and polish. So I would consider doing it in that order. The first thing that you need to do is be sure you're building the relationship with your child. The idea of sitting around the dinner table and having a conversation. A lot of parents and kids are lacking in the kind of attachment and connection that's needed. So the very first piece of advice is, you know, start having those family meals. You need to set those expectations with your children about spending more time together. I wouldn't jump and try and completely transform things because you'll just create a blow up. But, you know, if you're not even having meals together, then to say we'll start off with for 15 minutes, we're going to sit and you'll eat some of your food here before you go off to your room and build from there. Once you've established that relationship or you're continuing to have those conversations about each other's days and be in each other's lives, then it's a lot easier to have the conversation. and the conversation. Don't assume because you haven't seen any of those signs we talked about or your kid hasn't said anything that nothing's going on and there's no problem. The important part of the conversation is don't come in as the expert because you aren't the expert on the teen's world. You have an expertise as a parent, but it's important to listen and learn from them what they're going through. And as I said earlier, don't react. Planning is once you've learned that there is something going on, then what you're going to want to do is have a conversation, get some of the details about who it is, when it happens. You want to have information that if you do need to go to the school, you have something to inform them about. You want to talk about the different scenarios that are happening, because later when we get into polishing, it's going to be about doing some role playing, practicing with your child, how they could respond. Mm-hmm. And parent and child can take on the roles of bully and victim and interchange as you're practicing and learning these skills. And the more you overlearn them, when you're faced with it on the playground, you'll be practiced and polished and be able to give a better response.
Yeah. Some great advice in there. Thank you so much for coming in and helping us get through this tough time for a lot of kids.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Anytime.
Dr. Neil Gottheil is the clinical lead for outpatient mental health at CHEO and a very wise man.